In this podcast, you will learn the two components of the mind, System 1 and System 2 thinking, the problems with each and how they come about, and how to integrate them healthier into your life. This book, Thinking Fast and Slow, was an absolute game changer for me. It completely changed how I saw the world when I first read it, and I'm really excited to share the insights that I got in this podcast, because I bet you you're going to be so happy after listening to this that you're going to run to the bookstore and buy it immediately. That would be the ideal scenario. So have a great time, and I'll see you in the podcast.
My name is Sky, NFT survivor turned content creator.
And I'm Aiden, addicted video gamer turned content creator.
And you're listening to Kaizen, the weekly podcast where we talk about ideas, relationships, and the human condition.
Hello. Today, we're going to be talking about the common piece of advice that you have probably heard, Sky, which is, trust your gut. Hear it all the time. Now, first off, for most people, the advice, trust your gut, sounds horrible because, bro, everyone's eating fast food. You want to trust fast food in your gut? Like, that doesn't sound like a good idea. But on a more meta level, trust your gut has a lot of issues with it because of the way that we think and feel inside of the brain. And I realized this first after I read the book, Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman. Before reading this book, I thought thinking was just that. It was just like a very simple process that didn't have much complexities inside of it. There wasn't like a slow or a fast version. There wasn't multiple types.
Is this like a YouTube video?
Right?
Two times speed, one times. What are you talking about?
What do you mean?
Oh, I was just trying to make a joke about thinking fast and slow, like a video.
But no,
I killed the joke by explaining it.
I get it.
Okay.
I'm so sorry. Your joke is ruined. So after reading this book, I realized there are actually two systems in the brain for thinking. There's not literally two systems in the brain. It's just a useful model that they make in the book for how to go about thinking. I know, so meta. And by understanding how both of these systems work separately and with each other, I think it's helped me become a much more empathetic, kind, open-minded, curious person. And would be incredibly helpful for other people to understand as well. And before you respond, I wanted to tell one short story for how I really came face to face with the problems of not understanding the perils of the different types of thinking. And that was, I was taking an intergroup dialogue class a few weeks ago. And when I walked in, I saw this blonde girl in the class that was like the stereotypical blonde girl. Like, you know how you have this like stereotype of a blonde girl, which is like the dumb blonde. Like, they're super attractive, very, fun, but they also have like no critical opinions or like thoughts.
Sure.
So I'm ashamed to say that was my first impression of this person when I walked in. I didn't even talk to them. I was just like, oh, there's a dumb blonde. And then I sat down. And unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you think about it. Yeah, it says it's a dirty blonde. I know. It's horrible. Yeah. I end up talking to this person for one of the discussions. And she is like so insightful. Like, she was talking about how she was raised and how it affected the way that she saw her own like femininity versus masculinity. It has to do with the class ideas, but like, she was very deep, very insightful, completely eradicated my first impression. And it made me realize just how prone our gut feelings are to being wrong, which most people don't realize until they learn the difference between fast versus slow thinking, like I did in this book. So that's what I wanted to explore today, is not only the differences between fast versus slow thinking, but also the problems with both and how they develop, and also how we can build better fast versus slow thinking, how we can integrate them better into our lives.
Okay. So you're going to spend the next couple minutes explaining fast versus slow thinking. You're going to rewrite the code that our brains are running on, and then we'll have an actual framework to how to think properly and to be less prone to bias, less prone to self-made errors. And I guess you will improve our ability to think. So thank you, sir. And I'm excited to see what you have to say.
Well, I don't worry. I'll integrate you in. I know you haven't read the book, but you'll be like our dummy for the podcast. You'll be the guy that provides all the examples.
I'll be the dumb blonde. Once I was like, what?
No, you won't be the dumb blonde. You won't be the dumb blonde.
You're
the,
well, what do you mean? What thinking? What's that?
What's the book? I have never heard of a book before. What's that?
It must be cool to be literate, 'cause I'm out here.
Yeah. I'm out here in the Stone Age using like all right, rocks. So there are two different forms of thinking in the brain, system one and system two. You can see these as the components of the mind. System one thinking is fast, automatic, rapid, right? And severely biased.
Can you give me an example? System, so when you say that I would consider that like, okay, I see my jacket and I immediately know it's red or black or it's fast, immediate, or you know, I don't really understand what you mean by fast.
Are that, you saying that that's exactly what I was gonna do? You just didn't give me any time.
I'm listing out what it was. I'm a stupid blonde and you need to educate me, and I'm distraught. I'm so stupid right now and I need your help.
All right. I guess first, before we do that, we'll spend the rest of the podcast teaching you the ABCs, because clearly we need to catch you up a bit.
I want to start with numbers first.
Let's start with numbers first. Okay. So some examples of system one would be, first, judging a blonde girl on first impression. It's automatic. I didn't even think about it. Second, swerving aside to miss a deer in the road when you're driving. Don't have to think about it. You just immediately do it. It's automatic. Third, playing tennis once you've gotten good. I don't have to think about how I'm moving my racket as I'm playing. I just do it. It's automatic. In fact, if I thought about it, it would make me play worse. Okay. Because it would make it so I couldn't focus on hitting the reacting to the other person. It would make it so I'm focusing too much on like trying to make my perfect, make the perfect form. Kind of like what you were saying before we started the podcast about acting. Mm-hmm. If you're constantly thinking about the next line that you're going to say as the actor, what emotion you want to play, it keeps you from being present in the actual character.
Okay.
So those are some examples of system one thinking. System two thinking is slow, conscious, effortful. Some examples would be recording a video, like recording this podcast even, and me explaining this to you. I have to think about what I'm going to say next. I do have an outline to help me, but it's effortful. It's slow. Mm-hmm. It's conscious. Writing a YouTube script is another example. Solving difficult math problems. Consciously doing the right thing, even when it's the hard thing. So system two thinking could literally just be trying not to do what your system one thinking is trying to get you to do. That requires effort and concentration. Does that make sense so far?
So
maybe you could provide some more examples too.
Yeah. To show. From what I'm understanding, there's two different systems, system one and system two. One is automatic, but that doesn't mean that it's just you're born like this and everything is automatic. From what I understand, what you've said is that there's many things in life that are difficult to think about. And after enough repetition or enough, you know, time doing it, it can become system one. So, for example, walking. Take like a 3-year-old, 2-year-old. I think that's about the age. Maybe 1.5. They are beginning to walk. They have to think about everything. And then, you know, take a 10-year-old. They know how to walk. They're not thinking about it. So I give enough effort, it's become automatic. Same with riding a bike. Even with conversations with friends. When you're just, you know, chatting the chat, having fun, having a kickback. You're not really thinking about what you're going to say next. Versus this conversation here where it does take more effort. So I would say system two is, you know, as you said, conscious effort. You're actively thinking about it, solving a math problem, engaging in a debate, drawing something. But then once you do that activity enough, it could become automatic. You know, a professional artist might not have to think about shadows. They might be thinking about the shapes, but, you know, when they're shading in and they're shading, you know, okay, it's darker here because the light source is over here. That might not be a conscious process given enough time. And then after enough time, it becomes system one. It's automatic. You know, I imagine a stand-up comedian, they're not thinking, okay, well, I need to, you know, I mean, I make an exaggeration joke, which means I exaggerate. So let me make a joke about tall people. Okay, they're tall. How do I exaggerate that? You know, he's so tall, he hit his head on the door frame. Not a funny joke, but, you know, yeah. I had to actively think about it there. But I imagine given enough time that a professional comedian who has got actually funny jokes isn't thinking about every single, you know, framework. It's become automatic. So
yeah,
automatic, conscious, and then, you know, there can be an interplay that can go from one to the other.
Yeah, that was a great summary. And you really emphasized the relationship between them, which is good because you shouldn't think of one as better than the other. They're different and both have problems, especially when you don't realize that they even exist in the first place. So what are some of the problems with system one thinking? I'm sure you could guess a few. However, there's quite a few, which is it's very biased. It's very it has a ton of heuristics. I'm going to explain what all of these mean. Don't worry. Very emotional ridden. It's very judgmental. And it's fooled by randomness. So let's start with the first one. It's very biased. What I mean by biased, it has a preference for a certain outcome. So a good example would be system one is biased innately towards the easy path, whatever is less effortful. Like you can think about it like imagine you're walking in a mall and you see the stairs versus the elevator. And you don't even think about it. You just go to the elevator. You're like, nah. Yeah. And you just go, you don't even, that's system one right there. Because bias towards least effort.
I feel like that's maximizing my energy efficiency. That's a very good decision for me. That's me making a conscious choice to conserve my power on land, earth, and ground. So I don't have to, you know, spend more money at the grocery store. And I think it's conservative. I think it incorporates into my budget and that I'm saving money by, you know, not spending that calorie deficit, which would be accumulated from me taking the stairs.
That was a very interesting argument for not taking the stairs.
I'm on that show. There's like that show about like extreme, you know, money conservation.
Oh, extreme
€3 every month.
Every month by taking, yeah. You're definitely the guy. I find it funny if the podcast listeners think of you as this type of person. You're the guy that stops on the road and consumes the dead rabbit that got run over.
You know, I have thought about it on numerous occasions.
Oh.
Moving on.
Yeah, like, I thought you were going to say more, but you just stopped. You're like, I thought about
it. Well, that's the extent I'm going to give you as a dumb blonde. I thought about it. Now, as to the outcome or consequences of that story,
right.
It remains an everlasting mystery.
Oh, I see. Okay. You have to keep that dumb blonde vibe going.
The veil of ignorance.
So it's very biased. Another good example is... It has a innately confirmation bias built in. So what that means is you purposely search out information that fits, that confirms a preconceived belief. So a great example, I was reading a book on fasting when I was getting into fasting. I looked at my highlights after I finished the book out of interest, and I found out I had highlighted not a single thing that the book mentioned about fasting being bad, despite the fact that it mentioned quite a few about the cases where it wouldn't be good. And I was just like, eh, not important. Doesn't need to be looked at. So that's another example of...
So can I summarize two? The first one I understand as, you know, it's automatic. Like, for example, when I go to the store, I don't have a grocery list, but I'm pretty much automatically going to, okay, this specific type of meat, this type of steak. When I see the chocolate aisle, this type of chocolate, if I'm choosing to buy chocolate, and it's kind of automatic. I'm not even really thinking, like, there are other options, of course. You know, this steak or this vegetable, it might be nutritionally more beneficial, but, you know, it's, I'm just automatically, you know, picking from what I've kind of grown up eating. And then...
Yeah.
Okay, so that's automatic in that sense. And even with, like, bike routes. Like, I remember, I think for a couple months, I was running this one bike route, and then I found out there was a different one that was faster. I was like, whoa. So I like, automatically, I wasn't seeing all the options, basically.
Yeah.
And I was...
That exactly. Exactly. Okay. It became automatic. You weren't even thinking about it.
The second one is just you are, you know, more likely, if it's automatic, to just confirm what you already believe. And I did the same thing with fasting, just only consuming the positive information. I remember, like, watching a video on working out to, like, you know, you're going to reduce your gains because there's not enough, you know, you don't have protein in your system all the time. And I was like, no, it can't be true.
No. It's not true. It's not true.
Who is this guy? He's been working out for 15 years. Nothing.
Yeah. That's a great example. Yeah. Then it's also heuristic ridden. A heuristic means a shortcut. Your brain takes shortcuts all the time to save energy from having to think. Thinking takes effort. Have you ever, like, sat down and just tried to contemplate in your head without, like just a sheet of paper?
It's freaking hard. I'm still working on my
ABC.
I'm
stumbling.
I'm way back.
You're way back. Yeah. So it takes effort. So we have a lot of heuristics to make it faster. One of the most pervasive is the availability heuristic. This is when you think about how probable something is, not by how statistically probable it is, but by how easily it comes to mind. So, for instance, Sky, what do you think most people would say if you ask them how likely they are to get killed inside of a plane versus driving a car?
I mean, I know what you're going with this, but I think most people would say it's more likely in a car. Like, people,
maybe with that example, maybe that example, but maybe a better example would be tornado versus lightning. Like, which one's going to kill you more likely?
Tornado.
You are a smart man. You're much, much, much more capable than most people are at answering this question.
Okay. For example, how many people work out? And then I would say, I don't know, 10%. And then you're like, well, actually, there's 7 or 8 or 9 billion people or something. And, you know, most of the world doesn't have a gym. And, you know, most people. And
Yeah. That's a better example.
Yeah. I'm like, but what?
Okay. Point is, people take what is most available in their mind as indicative of the probability. So they vastly overestimate how probable a terrorist attack is, how probable they are to get killed by sharks, how probable they are to get killed by lightning. And they vastly underpredict how probable they are to get killed in a car accident, even though that's, like, by far one of the most likely things to kill you. So it's heuristic ridden. Finally, also emotional ridden. System one, super emotionally prone. The whole reason we have emotions, this is actually an interesting way to think about emotions that I didn't previously have, is like they are meant to get you to make a decision in a certain way faster. They're meant to bias you to acting in a certain way. If we didn't have emotions, we wouldn't act. There's actually been studies showing how someone that had their amygdala removed, how they acted differently inside of the world. And I think the biggest finding was they were just horrible at making decisions because they couldn't decide. You know, they were like that character in the... They were like...
No emotions?
Amygdala is one of the big emotional regulation systems in the brain. It also stores your emotional memory. They just couldn't make decisions. Like, imagine being at a restaurant with this person and, like... You decide what you want to get after 2 minutes, and they're like, 20 minutes later, they're like, I can't decide. Should I get the steak or the... They're like, they just can't decide. So you have to decide for them, basically. So system one's very emotional written. And then last one that I'll say is it's very fooled by randomness. What I mean by this is humans are incredibly bad at thinking probabilistically. When we're out on the savannah, you think they had calculators and statisticians on the squad? Like, someone's out here.
4,000 years ago, the aliens came and they built the pyramids. So they might have given us, I don't know. It's possible.
It is possible. There's a small chance. However, most tribes probably did not have calculators or statisticians with them. And because of that, we have not evolved to think probabilistically. So most people tend to mistake randomness for non-randomness. So a good example of this is, this is a funny example. So the investment trader that makes millions off of an investment, and they're like, yeah, look at me. I'm so smart. I'm like the god of investment. Everyone, come invest with me. I know what I'm doing. So everyone invests with him. They invest in, or them, I don't know. They invest in this market again, and boom, they just explode. They do horribly. What they didn't realize is the only reason that they had succeeded in the investment world was not because they had any idea what they were doing. It's because they accidentally invested in a way that went with what the market was doing at the time. But most people don't realize that. They see events as causal. We like to see causal relationships and things.
Okay.
So what ends up happening is there's all these investment traders that do well, even though they have literally no idea what they're doing, just because they randomly happen to be investing the right way at the certain time. And then a ton of people invest in them. They crash and burn. Everyone is sad.
Roger that.
Yes. So those are the problems with System 1 thinking. Now you might be thinking, Aiden, System 1 thinking sounds horrible. Why would I ever do it? This is bad. That is also a stupid idea. Imagine if you could only make conscious decisions. Like you could never automatically think again. Like you go into the bathroom, you're like, should I pick up this toothbrush? Should I not? I don't know. And then you just end up like standing there for like 5 minutes. I go through a pro and cons list. Like,
hey, I can now brush my teeth.
Yeah. So there's also problems with System 2. Conscious thinking. First of all, this is probably the most meta one. It fools you into thinking that you're being rational. Most people like to think the reason that they make decisions is because of reason and logic. However, what they don't realize
is
that...
You're breaking my brain a little bit.
Okay. Yeah, I'm breaking your brain. Oh, yeah. I'm about to, like, expose you. This is... What if I told you? Let me get my brain-breaking hat quickly. What if
the
I told you...
The moon landing didn't happen.
your frontal cortex, your system two thinking, your conscious, slow, effortful thinking, okay, is not there to make good, rational decisions. It is there to validate the stupid shit that your system one thinking gets you to do.
Okay.
You just accepted that so fast. Yeah. You're like, yeah, you're right. I've been doing stupid stuff my entire life, and I just validate it.
As someone still learning the alphabet, I'm just going to take your word for it.
And number system. Don't forget that.
The 10. I can do double.
Okay. You got to it while we're doing this podcast? That's impressive.
I know. I was using system one. It was pretty automatic. So.
Man, you might not be as dumb of a blonde as we thought if you can do that.
Feel different.
Yeah. So that's unfortunately, you'd hope I was joking, but I'm not. For most people, and also for just for everyone, system two thinking is often used for rationalizing stuff system one does. So a great example of this, have you ever heard of cognitive dissonance? Or no?
If you explain it, then I'll know what it is.
Okay. Cognitive dissonance is when there are conflicting beliefs and actions in that you have that create dissonance because they're conflicting. So what you do is you try and rationalize it in some way so that the dissonance is no longer there. So a good example, you believe that you are a healthy individual, that you care about your health. And then you walk into the kitchen, you see a few Snickers bar from somebody else in the college that you're at, and you just devour them. Like, you don't even you just eat them up like so fast.
Yeah.
And then someone like catches you. They're like, why would you do that? Your beliefs and your actions are misaligned. So you might, unless you have, you might do the respectable thing and you might try and align them by like admitting to your faults and like saying like, okay, you're right. Like I believe in myself as a truthful person and that I'm a healthy person. Like I can't lie to them about this. So you're trying to correct the dissonance, but you also might try and correct the dissonance by rationalizing it the other way. Like, oh, I was so hungry. Like,
well, I am working out and I need like a little bit of a carb boost. And so it would fuel my workout. And also like, you gotta be somewhat kind to yourself because I've been pretty disciplined and,
yeah,
you know, exactly. If I don't eat this because I'm eating the Snickers now, it'll actually increase my ability to lift later and I'll sleep better because, you know, I can go to bed and then I won't be watching a YouTube video first because I had some, you know, dopamine. Yeah. Now. So you can keep going.
Yeah, no, you got it exactly right. So that's a good example of like system two rationalizing your system one behavior.
You need cheat meals sometimes.
Yeah, of course. You need cheat meals sometimes. Another good example is sunk cost fallacy. Like you invest a ton of effort and time into something, and the fallacy is the fact that you invested time and effort makes you feel like you shouldn't waste it. You shouldn't stop doing it. It's like, well, I mean, I've already invested 100 hours into learning this useless skill that is no longer needed. Like, I might as well keep
like
doing
taking a Coursera course on data science, and I put in, I think, like 60 hours, maybe 50, 60. And I don't really want to be a data scientist, and there's like 20 hours left. This is a real thing. So I'm like 80% of the way, but I don't really want to finish, but I already came so far.
Yeah. Is that like an actual feeling that you have?
This is an actual example. This is true. Yeah.
I'm curious. What is the last 20% on? Would it be like at all useful?
R, and also I believe a final project, which would be quite a bit of effort. So
yeah, exactly. Or like another great example is like, imagine how mad dad would be if I got 3.5 years through Cornell, and then I was like, I'm dropping out.
it'd be kind of, I think, like be dumb as well.
One semester left. But the argument against that would be like, or the argument for that would be like, I mean, if you know positively that at your state, you have no intention of using your college degree for anything. And like all of your future,
there's a lot of, I think it's a lot of example would, you know, you go to a restaurant, you have a nice dinner, a nice entree, you're already quite full. And then you order dessert. Dessert is 20 euros. It's expensive. And you have half the dessert and you are like, honestly, so full, you almost want to throw up, but like you paid for the whole dessert and you're not done.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
that's another great example.
The cost of the bill is not going to change whether or not you finish the dessert. It's the same.
Yeah. So that's a great example. Sunk cost, cognitive dissonance, rationalization. Another problem is it's very slow, your system two thinking, whereas system one thinking is very fast. Okay. So these, you get the idea.
Hey, there's system two, there's conscious thinking, there's automatic thinking, but like, I'm just a regular dude. Like, why do I care? What's so important about this, Aiden? Why are you telling me this? What does this have to do for me and my life?
Yeah, that's a good, great question. I'm glad you asked that. So the reason it's so important is because understanding the situations in which system one and system two thinking are likely to lead you astray can help you prepare and avoid those situations in the future, right? If you know that your system one thinking acts a certain way, like Sky, for instance, for you, you know from at least you in the past how much chocolate is.
It still has some like, power.
Has some power. So knowing that, you can design your environment in a way that allows you to have that be less of a problem. If you didn't realize that, if you're just like, man, every single time I see chocolate, I can't stop. I don't know why. And like, it's like, then you can't do anything about it. And also, so that's the first thing. It helps you prepare and avoid the situation. But I think it also makes you a much, much, much more empathetic, kind, curious, open-minded human being. Because when you realize how biased your system one thinking is, how judgmental it can be, you stop believing your gut as much. And you question if it's really true. Because most people, they get told to like trust your gut, trust your emotions, as if it's like seen as like a good saying. This is a horrible saying. Most of the time, yeah, in some cases, your gut has the right answer, but in a lot, it's very biased.
I think it's in a particular context. They're not saying when you go to the store, trust your gut. What usually is happening is like they're in a job, 9 to 5. A year or two. They're like, should I stay or should I go? I'm not sure. And then you would say, trust your gut. Or you're in a relationship. It's like 2 months in. You're like, you know, there's some problems, but there's also some good things. And then they're like, should I stay or go? Like, that's the context in which that idiom, I think it's idiom, is used. In which case, I would be inclined to agree.
Yeah. I think in that context, it's a better idiom. But I think the larger context, like we were talking about, if you apply that idea, that's where it gets bad. So did that make sense as like why it's important?
To a certain degree.
you're terrifying because you're like halfway for the audience. You can't see this, but he's like, anytime we do this podcast, he's behind this mic and I can only see half of his face. It's such a stupid setup. And like, it looks like the joke. He looks like the Joker with his like creepy smile. What made you want to get this mic in specific?
For that very reason.
For that very reason. So you can like hide like a gremlin. You're also like, you're so far away from the camera. Like you're like a tiny little midget.
I don't appreciate you talking to me in this system two way. Very conscious about my decisions and my camera setup. And
well, it's too bad for you because I'm doing it anyway. So you might be thinking, I know exactly what you're thinking right now. So Aiden, how, like you just gave all those whys, but how the heck does our system one and system two even develop? Like, why are some people so prone to certain biases and some people are not? Like, why aren't we all just like kind, happy human beings that jump around in rainbows and eat lollipops all day?
That was on my mind. Yeah, you read my thoughts.
What's I read your thoughts exactly. Yep. Well, I'm glad you asked because one of the best reason for why is socialization, which is the process through which we are taught how to act in society. So from the very beginning, before you're born into a certain backdrop of society, depending on where you're born, obviously. Like, there are certain people that are dominant, that are in power, that you had no control over. I heard that. There are certain people that have power that you had no control over. Where you're born, you had no control over. Like, the culture you're born into, right? All of that, you have no control over. So that's the beginning. And then from when you're born, you're first socialized by your parents, your teachers, medical doctors, police officers, and just one-on-one interactions with like friends, strangers. They all teach you.
A pretty wealthy upbringing, bro. One-on-one interactions with MDs. Like, yeah, that's, you know, when true. When you're growing up and you're just, you know, dapping up your medical doctor as a four-year-old.
As a four-year-old. Like, what are
you
talking
about? Okay. Yeah, I was talking with this fireman.
You never interacted with your doctor when you were in like... When you were okay. like in your
You're
teens.
Saying you're born into different socioeconomic status and you are, put in situations and it varies depending on your birthright.
Exactly. Yes. So that's first socialization. You can think of first socialization as socialization with individuals
medical doctor.
Dude, like, I don't know why you find that so funny.
Grew up in a
your four-year-old self talking to a medical doctor.
Go on.
And then we have institutional and cultural socialization. This is the socialization that occurs from institutions like school, the medical hospital. Don't make a joke about that. I swear to God. The fire station, the police office. I swear to God, don't make a joke of like, when's your 14-year-old self at the police office? Like, shut up, okay?
When I was selling drugs at age six.
Oh, God.
I'm on the corner of the street, tossing out weed. And the police officer with an MD in the back strolled up, and I was like,
with an MD in the back. That's how you met your medical doctor at that age.
Well, yeah, I had like lung cancer, so he had to, sort me out.
Jesus Christ.
Like, I'm just putting together the pieces of this story.
The pieces. You've got the pieces.
Okay. And then I was in a jail cell for a while and I was
surviving off of scraps. Then there's finally reinforcements and punishments, which are the reinforcers in society that keep things a certain way, and the punishments given out when those things change. And there's one thing that I haven't said that I should have said before I said that, which is this socialization throughout the beginning, our first socialization and institutional / cultural socialization, it ingrains social identities inside of us and others. And social identities are culturally made. Let me see my exact definition so I don't make this up. Social identities. The identities we give to ourselves and from others in society. So some examples are age, body size, race, socioeconomic status, religion, gender status. Like, these are all human-made constructs. They don't exist in reality. We made them. That's the only reason they exist. And depending upon the social identities that you have and the specific combination that you have and also the context that those social identities are in, you will get certain advantages and disadvantages. So, like, we get a ton of advantages for being cis white males in society. Cis? In most places we go. Cis just means straight. Whereas someone that's a trans black woman is like severely disadvantaged in most places. So all of this is to say that the socialization that you go through profoundly changes how your system one and system two thinking work. That's why when I walked into the intergroup dialogue class and I saw the blonde white girl, that I was like, ah, this is definitely a dumb blonde. Like 100% ain't no way, because of how I've been socialized to see white blondes. Whereas someone else that walked in, I don't know, maybe another white blonde, would have been like, ah, hello. Like they wouldn't even have had that first impression.
Yep.
It just wouldn't have been there because of how they've been socialized.
Okay.
Did that make sense?
Yeah. So you're saying you're born, you can be born in different places, different times, different values. If you're from a, you know, a wealthy upbringing, you probably, even just the underlying way you think, you use more sophisticated words because you interact with, like, you know, more educated people. That can change the way you think. It can change the way you think about yourself. Like, let's say you were born in Singapore and you have a very, very tough upbringing in terms of school. Okay, let's see, how do your parents choose to punish or reward you? Do they give you, I don't know, a prize, a gift for when you do well in school? Or is it, oh, you didn't get an A, I'm going to punish you. You get no dinner tonight. How do they reward? How do they incentivize things? And then this will have a large impact on, you know, how you grow up, how you see the world, how you think when you enter a room. Like, do you even consider the possibility of talking to the smart-looking kid? Because, you know, if you were from a smart upbringing, relatively speaking, then you feel like you can talk with that person. But if you're from, you know, a poor upbringing, then you might not even feel that you have any commonalities. So it's really affecting the way you go through different situations, the opportunities you even see yourself taking part in, what you choose to do in a given situation, what options you even think are possible. Like if you've, you know, grown up watching YouTube and you've, you know, seen celebrities or you've seen, you know, gym stars, and you're like, oh, that body is attainable, but someone who's never seen that might not even consider that a possibility. And, you know, you're basically saying that this is all automatic. A lot of this stuff we need to consciously think about. And, you know, you're not really seeing reality for what it is, but because you've been indoctrinated and you've grown up in a certain way, you're blind to other possibilities and, you know, what you could actually, you know, even think or do in any given situation.
Yeah. Couldn't have said it better myself. That was a great, great example, especially with the YouTube thing. Like when I grew up in high school and all I watched was Minecraft YouTube, and I was like, I'm going to be a Minecraft YouTuber. Yeah. And you thought that's what I'm going to do. Yeah. That was all I thought was possible. Yeah. So like the socialization you go through profoundly affects your system one and system two, which is why I think it makes you so much more empathetic, because you realize other people act the way they do because of their socialization. And you can help, they, if they break free from their socialization, they can start to act more intentionally. But ultimately, that's why it makes you a lot less judgmental, because you don't know how they were socialized when they were younger. Mm-hmm. And like for us, it's much easier to eat, sleep, and exercise because our parents did. We were socialized to. Whereas for other people that literally live in a household, not saying it's not, live in a household that has like fast food everywhere and their parents don't exercise, sleep, or eat healthily, it's still their responsibility to, but it's way harder.
Yeah, they've grown up, they're, you know, their body's used to eating those things. It tastes really good. You know, they miss it. It takes them a couple of years to, you know, change the gut microbiome.
Yeah, exactly.
In my acting class, for example, like I'm in the Netherlands and I'm the only native English speaker in the class. So, you know, I get any passage and I'm just, you know, reading it, perfect fluency, and it just comes out. But, you know, everyone else is either Italian, Portuguese, Russian, some other country, Ukrainian. And they're struggling and they, you know, they can't pronounce the words effectively. And then during their scene, like they have to kind of consciously think about how do I, you know, say this word? And it's kind of their advantage and they're thinking about that. Whereas for me, just speaking my native language is system one. For them, it can be system two.
Yeah. So it takes away from their actual ability to act, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So wrapping up, how can we build better system one and system two thinking with that in mind? There's a few things, first principles, that you can apply. The first is become open-minded and curious. The only way you can break your system one unconscious habits is by questioning them. So when you have a first impression of someone, next time ask why you have that impression. Like, what made you believe this about them? And is it really accurate? Or is it just you coming up with this first impression from the way you've been socialized that isn't actually true? And then just like expose yourself to more experience. The more experiences you expose yourself to, the more that you can find these areas where your system one thinking is conflicting with reality, and the more that you can adopt like healthier system one thinking habits. Then we have adopt a growth mindset. Do you know what a growth mindset is? You've heard like Carol Dweck's growth mindset, right?
You learn more and you grow.
Are you serious?
I know exactly what it is, but you can explain.
Yeah. It's a mindset that Carol Dweck proposed in her 2006 book, aptly titled Mindset, that it means that you believe with effort you can increase your skill and intelligence. It's not fixed. Having that mindset makes you much more willing to fail because you know that failure helps you learn oftentimes better than success. So if you have a growth mindset, you're going to be willing to put yourself in those situations where your system one and system two thinking might be wrong. And that'll allow you to build better system one and system two thinking habits. And then I have two more. The first is be more skeptical of system one thinking in situations where you know it might lead you astray. So, for example, situations that have a lot of probability, like the investing market, or the gambling scene, anything that has a lot of probability, you know how bad humans naturally are at it. So you should go in knowing your system one thinking could lead you astray. Mm-hmm. And that will help you prepare for that. And then for your, or like my case, like situations where you know you're going in to like, I don't know, if there's a ton of chocolate and you're like, okay, I got to figure out a way to navigate this, right? And be prepared mentally. Mm-hmm. And then finally, get to know your characteristic system one and system two patterns through journaling and reflection. If you write down every single day, like you just do journaling, you'll be able to spot the recurrences in how you think, how you feel. And once you're aware of it, then you can make the conscious decision to change it. That's one of the best things that system two is for, is consciously changing system one habits to become more, to be more in line with what you actually, how you actually want to act. So those are Aiden's tips for building better system one and system two thinking. I can promise you the next time that I see a blonde in a situation, I probably still will have the first impression that they are a dumb blonde, but I will be able to question that and think, maybe I should give them a chance.
Yes.
You're a man of few words. Did you learn your ABCs and tens?
I would consider myself a semi-dumb.
Semi-dumb. Okay. Yeah. Only semi-dumb. That's good.
Thank
to
you.
Hear.
For giving me this gospel of information and truth and enlightenment. And I guess I would broadly say you are knowing these two different systems of thinking better able to examine how you yourself are acting, and then live a more examined life, more in line with what you actually want, and being a better overall, more virtuous person, because you're more aware of your own inadequacies and shortcomings.
Know thyself. Yeah.
That's a wrap.
I'm curious before I say bye to the viewer, how much did you know about that before we did the podcast? Because like for me, it's like I've grappled with these ideas for so long, I have no idea how most people.
I think I knew like 100%.
Are you serious?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, everything you explained, I've heard it, but I kind of just know about it. I don't know where. Maybe some YouTube browsing, but yeah, I knew this for sure.
So you knew about it, but it might not have just been the words, the terms that I used, like system one and system. Okay,
yeah.
I get you.
Yeah,
I get you. That's awesome, dude. You're like way ahead of most people.
It's like, for example, like when you walk down the street, right? And you're walking down the street and then, you know, you see someone and they're walking down the street too. And you're like, is this person going to stab me with a knife? I'm not sure. you know, it's possible. It's a possibility. But, you know, every human interacts in a certain way that's kind of, you know, we're kind to each other. And then the word for that would be the social contract. Like it's an unspoken set of rules. So what you just told me with system one, system two is you put a label on something I already knew about.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yep. You just labeled it. But yes, I did know this, if that was your question.
That's awesome. Well, now the viewers know it as well. And maybe the viewers had a first impression of us when they first started listening to the podcast as two dumb blondes. Now there's one. And it's me. We made the same joke. That's a wrap. We'll see you on the next Kaizen episode. Thank you for watching.